UK Wine Show, show number 75. Murray McHenry on McHenry Hoen. On this week's show...
And we went out on a basis that we weren't going to commence making wines that had been done at Cape Mentelle. We wanted to... The art of winemaking is very much in blending.
And in the news this week, a double helping of Brazilian wine, a top chef creates an All England wine list, and Kiwis find new uses for unwanted grapes.
G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 75 for the 2nd of November 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we are talking with grape grower Murray McHenry. Murray grows grapes for the winery McHenry Hoen, and with his brother David Hoen. David was the man behind Aussie icon wine Greenpoint and New Zealand icon wine Cloudy Pay. And Murray was a key grape grower during the days at Greenpoint. We're going to be talking with Murray about comparing the viticultural practices of producing wines in an organic manner versus the industrial size process used at Greenpoint. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. First up this week, news that vines grown in Brazil at 8 degrees latitude are producing 2 crops a year. The grapes are being used to produce Rio Sol, a Cabernet Sauvignon Shiraz blend, which is being sold in Waitrose at $4.99 a bottle. The climate is tropical and the vines develop a steady stream of grapes at different times of the year, allowing them to be cropped twice instead of once. Nick Room, the wine buyer at Waitrose, reckons there's potential for other countries to produce double-cropping wine, such as China or India. But as good as it sounds, no one knows how the cropping could affect the longevity of the wine. Next up, it's a brave person who opens a restaurant and puts just English wine on the wine list. But that's exactly what Michelin star chef Tom Aitkins will do when he opens Tom's Place in London next month. The idea behind the fish and chip restaurant is that it should be as environmentally friendly as possible. Along with sustainable fish and recycled furniture, there will be a short list of wines exclusively from England. This will help minimise their carbon impact as the bottles won't have to travel too far from the vineyards to the restaurant. The list will include wines from Knightimber, Denbighs, Balfour, Chapel Down and Brightwell Vineyard. The majority will be white, with grape varieties such as Bacchus, and the token red will be a Pinot Noir from Chapel Down. Our final story this week is an eco-friendly initiative that's turning a waste product of wine into a saleable commodity with health-giving properties. A New Zealand company has developed a method of producing antioxidant extracts from Sauvignon Blanc grape seeds. The extracts can be used in a wide range of cosmetics and food products, and research by the Marlborough-based company has shown that the seeds from Sauvignon Blanc grapes in Marlborough contain twice as high antioxidants as seeds from grapes elsewhere in the world. That's all in this week's news, but 30 years ago, Barolo and Barbaresco became the first two Italian regions to be granted DOCG status, the highest quality classification for Italian wines. Below DOCG are DOC wines, followed by IGT wines that sit above Italian table wine or vino da tavola. Don't forget you can get more detail on these news stories on our news homepage at 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. You may have mentioned I talked about that Rio Sol a couple of weeks ago. It was a full ripe wine in a style that will sell well and at around £5. I do think if China and India can get their wines to the same standard as this, there may be a sea change at the bottom end of the market. Let's face it, if you're producing twice as much wine from the same area and vine, then you must be more efficient than someone taking one crop a year. This type of wine, I think, could dominate the bottom end of the market in years to come. It's certainly worth watching and definitely worth trying. Perhaps with wine at 8 degrees latitude, and England now producing grapes at 53, I may need to change the name of the company from 3050 to 853. Next week, we're going to actually be talking to Robert Joseph, who is going to comment on this a wee bit. The next story, good on Tom Aitkins. I think he's being very brave by going for an all-English wine list. But those fresh, crisp wines from England will go great with fish and chips. Quite like a bit of Bacchus and fish and chips myself. But the wines are not cheap, and I'm not convinced of the sustainability flag. Sure, from a carbon miles point of view, drinking English wine, you can't get better. But I'm not convinced that England is actually a low carbon wine producer, given the intensive spraying and frost protection required. And lastly, the antioxidants from the grape skins and pips. I'm not surprised by the high antioxidants from New Zealand wines. It's been shown, particularly to do with Mendoza, that UV light encourages grape skin production and thickening. And New Zealand has a huge ozone hole that forms over the Arctic and cruises up over New Zealand during the summer. It's caused by CFCs, you know, those hairsprays and that used in the 70s and 80s. That lack of ozone, I think, increases the amount of UV light getting through and encourages the antioxidant response by the grape varieties. I've heard it spoken in circles that some of those extra intensive Marlborough flavours could be partly due to this lack of ozone and the high levels of UV light. But I'm not sure. There is a problem, though. That hole is slowly getting smaller as less and less CFCs are being used in the world. This should drop New Zealand's appalling high skin cancer rate, but may mean a change in the wine styles. Also, antioxidants in soap. I was speaking to a guy who makes soap using grape seeds and skins from Australia, and I asked him about how does the antioxidants get in the skins if it's only applied on the surface in very low levels and then washed off. I'm not too sure about it, and he wasn't convinced either, even though he was selling it. Next up, we have the interview with Murray McHenry. Murray has grown grapes for Cape Mentau. Now with his brother-in-law, David Hohen, they've set up McHenry Hohen Wines. We contrast the growing grapes for Cape Mentau and his new organic methods he's trying to follow. Hi, I'm here with Murray McHenry from McHenry Hohen. How are you, Murray?
I'm very well, thank you.
Okay, You were originally a grower for Cape Mentau, and David, your business partner, was the person who started Cape Mentau.
Yes, well, firstly, David's married to my sister, and when he started in the wine industry in Margaret River back in 1971, I stayed very close to what they were doing down there because we had the great interest in wine and not in consuming it, but certainly as a young children, Sandy, my sister and I grew up with our father being a prisoner of war in Italy in the Second World War. He had a love affair with wine when Western Australia, where we come from, wine was not really, it was just a beer state.
Yep.
And so we grew up with wine as young children, and so when David took that decision to go into the wine industry, become a winemaker, you know, we were sort of fascinated and sort of quite involved with him throughout that commencement of his career.
Okay, and you grew, Cape Mentau got to, I think you were telling me earlier, 3,000 tonnes.
Yeah, approximately. I mean, the high 2,000, 3,000 tonnes where Cape Mentau got to, and Cloudy Bay on top of that, and I've forgotten now the figures of Cloudy Bay, but it's substantial as well. It's in that vicinity as well.
Okay, and now you and David have started your own business. You've sold up Cape Mentau David sold Cape Mentau to LVMH, Louis Vuitton.
Louis Vuitton, yeah. But in fact, he did the deal with Joseph Onrio, who had sold the Onrio Champagne vineyards to Veuve Clicquot. Clicquot was a company in its own right and was a division, I suppose, of LVMH. So David's involvement was always with Clicquot.
Okay, yep.
It's only been at more recent times for marketing and distribution purposes that LVMH chose to put it all under
their
varying banners under an LVMH banner.
So your new business with David is you make about 150 tonnes of fruit.
I think across the board we produce around about 600, 700 tonnes of fruit, and we select out of that varieties that we want to make the wines that we do make. And we went out on a basis that we weren't going to commence making wines that had been done at Cape Mentau. We wanted to use some of the experimental varieties that we'd been, in fact, David was chasing over the years, and we had small plots of those. We started playing around with some of those, the beginning of the century, and we enjoyed some of the Rhone Valley styles.
It's Marsanne, I
saw
you.
And the Marsanne, Ruzan, Viogniers, the Grenache, and the Mourvèdre. So we thought that Margaret River was going to give us good expression of that fruit, and particularly in blending. We see the art of winemaking is very much in blending, and consequently most of our wines are blends. So yes, we have varietals such as Chardonnay and Zinfandel, but in the main we do a lot of blending, and we feel that we can then get the expression of the fruit and the balance and the harmony in those blends to produce something a little bit different rather than repeat what we've done before.
What is the big difference when you're growing grapes for Cape Mentale versus growing grapes now? Is there a difference in your approach to the way you grow your grapes?
Yeah, I think as we've got older, we have a different view on life and sustainable methods is what we're looking for. We like to produce food for ourselves from sustainable farming, and we've decided to grow grapes in the same manner, so that we have this non-interventional approach to our properties, our farms, and that therefore goes into our viticulture practice and cross into our winemaking methodology that we use, and hopefully everything makes itself, and all we are is custodians of the land and the animals that are on it and the plants that grow and then the wine. So it's that non-interventional approach to sustainable farming.
Are you organic then?
Well, we follow fully organic principles, and because the farms have had in the past were farms and farmers used phosphates and so on like that, there is no doubt going to be a number of years for those really get out of your soils. So we like to say that we follow organic principles rather than say that we are organic, and we haven't sought to be certified as organic growers, but that will be an aim of ours in the future.
Given that you're now restricted by following these sustainable viticultural practices in terms of the sprays that you're using, do you find that the grapes you produce are different from maybe the previous grapes you produced for Cape Mentale, or do you think they're very similar?
Well, I think it's in terms of difference in the taste and the flavours. I don't think we're seeing any differences in there. I think it's more that we believe that in what we're doing in the vineyard that we see animals or bugs in the vineyards that some sprays would remove, and we think that some of the trouble that you get yourself into, it's a rolling ball that just gathers speed, because as you get rid of a problem, you actually add another one.
Yep.
And so we're enjoying seeing some of the spiders and the different insects that come into our vineyard. And if we can try and use methodologies to get rid of the ones that we don't want, i.e. weevils and things like that. In Margaret River, we have capeweed, which is a broadleaf plant, and which there's nothing wrong with that, except that's where they breed underneath it. So if we put sheep into the vineyard, they eat the broadleaf. And so we have this methodology of preventing the pests that we don't want by a natural method.
Your philosophy of being fairly natural about your approach to things, does that go through all the way through into the winemaking? Like some people use indigenous wild yeasts, some people use inoculated yeast, they buy their yeast in packages. Do you follow the process all the way through in the winemaking process?
In the main, yes. I mean, sometimes you may have a difficult wine in getting it to go through a natural ferment.
Or stuck fermentation.
Stuck fermentation, and it may need some help. So those sort of things will happen, so we don't rule that out. Our preference is for natural ferments.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. What about like some vintages, you must have problems in the vineyard, whereas maybe in the past you just sprayed. Do you see a big variation from vintage to vintage, or a bigger variation from vintage to vintage?
Mostly in moisture related issues. So if there's some dampness around and mildews, things like that, well, we can treat those with sulphur, and that's not a chemical. It's a natural additive. And by spraying that and having it a very fine mist spray, we can maintain those. But sometimes a bit of botrytis will come in certain varieties, such as Zinfandel, and all of a sudden the sugar levels race away from us literally overnight, and we may not have the ripeness in the fruit that we're looking for. You see it, and you can almost see them going to raisin, and you say they've got to be ripe, but they're actually not ripe, and that becomes a problem. And then we have to deal with the alcohol problem of that wine. But look, if we see that happen, we try and control it. If it runs out of control, well, then we just won't produce the wine. And that's a loss in monetary terms, but certainly it keeps us up there in our clientele base. Know that if we don't produce a wine, then there was good reason why we didn't do it. It wasn't right for the market.
I mean, we talked upstairs about the variation from vintage to vintage.
If I can say that, you get variation from vintage to vintage, but I think what I was trying to get across there was that some of the issues will give you variations in vintage, but that's something that we enjoy, the variations from vintage to vintage,
yep.
Because they do give you different aspects of each wine from year to year, and I think that's the part of the enjoyment of wine.
How do restaurants deal with that? Because your wines are destined for the restaurant trade, and restaurants quite often I've always thought restaurants quite often like consistency from one year to the next, so that, you know, it's less work for them almost.
Yeah, well, unfortunately with us, they're going to have to see the variation from vintage to vintage, and that's something they need to deal with. And it may be that they don't like a particular vintage and therefore won't buy the wine. They'll drop us off the list. We might come back again.
Yeah.
And look, we're, there's no apology there. We clearly see that the wines are going to be expressive of their variety, expressive of their soil type, and certainly expressive of the climatic conditions of that particular year, which every year is slightly different. And,
sure.
It creates its own challenges as winemakers, but it does give you those beautiful flavour profiles that from vintage to vintage. And there is a common thread, obviously, from the variety and the soil type, but there is that subtle change from the vintage to vintage in the climatic conditions.
Do you think that your current production methods emphasise that, maybe compared to the older days when you're at Cape Mentelle?
Well, more so with white wines. If at Cape Mentelle, Cape Mentelle's biggest selling product is Semillon Sauvignon Blanc, and at Cloudy Bay it was Sauvignon Blanc, and it's almost like every year they taste the same. I mean, they're always beautiful and fragrant when they're first released. They get a bit more complex as they go through the cycle of that 12 months. The wines that are produced produced and released almost in the year that they were of that vintage. So. And they're sold by the end of that year, so the next one comes out.
Yep.
Whereas our wines now are wines that we would release a little bit later, and they change dramatically in the bottle as time goes on, and then they give you a different experience. So yeah, there is a big difference in that.
Okay, as a winery that produces wines for restaurant wines, are you making your wines differently for the restaurant trade, or you know, do you think they go down as well with food or as without food?
Well, certainly we would say our wines are made to accompany food, and that they're sort of a more textured style, and therefore food is very much part of the experience that you need to balance out with. We do have a Semillon Sauvignon Blanc, and that's more an easy drinking style with food, without food, doesn't matter. But when you start getting into your Marzans on the whites and your Shiraz Grenaches and Tempranillos and things like that in the reds, there we see them very much as food wines.
What do you think are the main attributes for a wine that is good for food as opposed to a wine for standing up quaffing?
Well, it's a difficult question, that one. I think the attributes of the wines that are matured in oak and things like that tend to be the slightly more complex and textured style, and they're the ones that really are the food wines. The wines that are made in a more straight up and down method in stainless steel or in other cases where some winemakers will produce a more even wine by using a different treatment of oak. Those wines just suit the standard quaffing.
Okay, excellent. I think we'll wrap it up there.
No, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much, Murray. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Murray. I don't know if I agree with him about food matching with wines that are oaky. I could think of several food wines, such as Riesling, Gewürztraminer, that go well with food and are unoaked. I think it's more about the structure of the wine, tannins, acidity, sweetness, as being more important than oak. On a separate note, though, one of the varieties that Murray grows is Marsanne. Usually you find this in the Rhone Valley along with Roseland and other blending partners. I got to try 100% Marsan this weekend at the wine show, and I was pretty impressed by it as a grape variety. It had the same peach stone fruit aromas that you expect with maybe a Viognier, but it was a lot fresher and lower alcohol without that real oily glycerol feel that Viogniers often have. I really enjoyed tasting it, and I think I preferred it to the heavier Viognier that I tried it against from Yalumbra. Speaking of the wine show, thanks to all you guys who came and visited us and said hello. I had a great chat with some of you guys, even the guys whose name I won't mention, who did say that he didn't like the way I introduced Jane as Jane Scott during the news. What'd you think of it this week, mate? Sorry, it's a one-off. She will be referred to Jane Scott from now on. And as last week was the end of our poll, this week we've got a new poll. This week is all about alcohol consumption based on that hazardous drinking report a couple of weeks ago. So here's the poll question. The UK government advises drinkers to drink no more than 3 to 4 units of alcohol a day for men and 2 to 3 units for women. Just so you know, a unit is considered 8 grams of pure alcohol. Would you say you regularly drink more, drink less, drink about that much? Don't know. Not sure. Don't count the units. Or I don't think I'd worry about it too much. If you want to have your say, just go to our website, 3050.co.uk. And if you click through to the UK Wine Show, the poll's on the right-hand side. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Robert Joseph. He's a British-born wine expert and writer. And in 1984, along with Charles Metcalfe, he launched Wine International magazine, and more importantly, the London International Wine Challenge, which grew to become the world's biggest wine competition. Since then, Robert has launched the International Wine Challenge in Asia, as well as in Russia, and has launched the event in India this year. He was the wine correspondent for the Sunday Telegraph for 16 years and until 2001, and is the author of more than 28 books, including twice winning the Glenfiddich Award for Wine Writing. So we're going to be talking to Robert next week. So until then, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.